My Mac Mini Podcast number 12, sponsored by SmallDog.com and Innotech.com.
Hello, my name is David Cohen. I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. As I'm sure you can tell from the slightly tinny audio quality of this podcast, I'm not recording this fenestration in my normal working environment. I've had a slightly busy weekend with family commitments this weekend, and this evening I'm having to travel down to a work appointment for Monday morning across the country. Hence I'm recording this on my MacBook in the car park of a McDonald's halfway on my journey. As a result, this podcast will be shorter than normal. I hope you'll bear with me. Please complain to David Cohen at mymac.com. Firstly, I wanted to mention that Parallels has been updated in the last week or so. They've had a beta release candidate for some time now, but they finally managed to push it out the door as an actual release. The principal changes in this release are support for the Core 2 Duo machines, that's the Mac Pro and the latest iMac, together with fixing a peculiar little bug that meant you couldn't have more than 2GB of memory on a Mac Pro if you wanted to run a Parallels session. They've also improved the USB support, and this release has official support for the Vista Release Candidate 2 software. If you're interested in having a look at Vista, this is one good way of doing it. I've loaded up Vista on my Parallels session myself. I have loaded up a Vista session on my MacBook and managed to get it work using the beta of the software. I've not actually tried it with the latest release version, principally because I don't have enough time to have a good look at Vista at the moment. I'll get back to you on Vista in a later podcast. One other thing that I did discover this week that I thought I might share with you is a Mac utility called Dave, D-A-V-E. It's supplied by a company called Thursby Software. Now what Dave does is it takes the existing OS X TCP/IP stack and adds some extra functionality to it. Effectively it adds extra Windows support to the stack. Now Windows is fairly standards compliant nowadays in terms of its TCP/IP operation, but this wasn't always the case. Back in the days of Windows 3.1 and Windows 95, TCP/IP on Windows was a slightly odd affair. If machines wanted to talk to each other, they had to either browse the network directly or use something called a WIN server, which stands for Windows Internet Naming Service. Now WINS works in a similar way to DNS works on the internet. On the internet, when you type www.mymac.com, that request goes to a DNS server that actually looks up the mymac.com address in its table and sends the address to you, so you know which IP address to get to the website. WINS works in much the same way on a Windows network, but it's a different standard than DNS, so normally DNS TCP/IP services can't use it. Now Windows machines know all about this, of course, and they're quite able to look for a WIN server as opposed to a DNS server to get the IP addresses of all the Windows machines on the domain that you might be in. And this works really well on a local area network if you're running Windows. Of course, a Mac can't read WINs directly, and if you're in a network which relies on this WIN service, then you can't see the Windows machines on your domain quite as easily as the Windows machine next to you might be able to. Now if you're on a modern Windows network, they've become much more standards compliant and a Mac will normally be able to browse the network without problem. But if you're on an older Windows network that's running NT4 servers, then you may find that it's very difficult to actually navigate to the Windows shares on the network and connect to them using OS X. This is where Dave comes in. Dave effectively implements WIN support in your machine. So effectively, when you go to make a network request, it will look for and find the local WIN server, send it a request, and get a list of all the local Windows machines. This makes it much easier to use a Mac on a Windows network that's relying on WINs principally. Now, WIN support is not Dave's only features. It can do other things like reconnect automatically to Windows shares when you log on. Obviously, OS X doesn't do that automatically. It will just leave a connection share in your Finder, and you have to click on that to actually initiate the connection. Dave will also properly cache Windows passwords so that when you connect to Windows machines over the network, you're not constantly prompted for reconnections. The product grew out of an OS 9 version of the software. Back in the OS 9 days, there was no support whatsoever within OS 9 for connecting to Windows shares, and so Dave came on the scene to actually make that happen. It could be argued that the software is not quite as useful nowadays in modern Windows networks running proper DNS support. But nevertheless, if you do come across a Windows network where you're having difficulty connecting to other machines, you may want to take a look at the trial of this software. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Hi everybody, John Nemo and David Weeks here for the MyMac.com mini podcast number 11. Hi David, how you doing today?
John, I'm good, how are you?
Let's call this the two captains. Captain Weeks, because he's an airline pilot in real life, meets Captain Nemo. And the new name of my segment is All Over the Mac. But today we're talking about new features in iTunes 7. Let's get you over here to the mic, David. What have you learned in your journeys through iTunes 7 so far?
Well, John, probably haven't learned as much as I should have, but I was pleasantly surprised to discover the cover art feature that's new in iTunes 7. I know that there were third-party providers that allowed you to get cover art, but now Apple has, as is typical for them, taken over that feature and incorporated it right into iTunes itself.
But is it any different from the album art we used to be able to get in previous versions of iTunes?
My understanding is that it's essentially the same thing. I was not that familiar with the earlier cover art providers because I didn't use it. It was too much hassle. Never bothered. But since it was built in and you get it through the advanced menu from iTunes 7, and it's essentially one-stop shopping that Apple takes care of, I said, what the heck? I let it chew on my iTunes music library. I've got about 518 albums at last count. And over the course of, perhaps 10 minutes, it motored through my library and picked up cover art for about 80, maybe 85% of my albums.
How do you actually get this? Where do you go to get this feature? What's it called? Cover something?
It is called Cover Flow.
Okay.
And
how do you access it
through the advanced menu. You go to Get Album Artwork, and you acknowledge the dialog box, and iTunes will go through your music library, and it will search the database. I do not know whether Apple is running this in-house or if they are merely passing it behind the scenes to a third-party provider, but it will bring in cover art for all the albums that it can.
Now, do you need to go somewhere special on that little view icon next to the name of the song, between the song and the search area at the top of the iTunes window?
Apple provides three different views to look at your music library. The third choice is for viewing cover art. If you wish to view your music library using the cover art feature, click the rightmost of the three view icons and you'll see the cover art pop up in the upper part of the window, and there's a horizontal scroll bar. And rolling that to the right or to the left is almost like you're back in a 1960s jukebox where you're cranking the handle, watching the cover pictures of the jukebox music selections roll by.
Alphabetically, I think.
When you see the album that you want to play, click it, and it'll select the first track in that album. And if you want, you can begin playing it. If you want to view the rest of the albums in that track, go down to the music library and sort the albums by album, and then it will succeed through tracks 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, etc.
So is there any way to get it to go to the next track without first sorting it by album?
No.
You can't use your right arrow or any of that sort of stuff?
To the best of my knowledge, and I am not yet the expert that I plan to be next week, that's not the case.
And what happens if the iTunes store doesn't have the album art in its collection?
Well, interesting question, John, because we've run this on your music library, and you have a very extensive collection of Beatles music, and everybody knows that regardless of the fact that Steve Jobs is a big Beatles fan, you can't buy any Beatles albums through the iTunes Music Store, so you get a generic musical note for the album, and there is no album art for albums that the iTunes Music Store does not sell. At least that's my best estimation as of right now.
So it shows those generic pairs of eighth notes glued together on every single album that's not currently art available in the iTunes Store.
That's correct. I would have thought that a a double dotted quarter note would have been better, but they selected a tied eighth note.
Okay, any other new stuff in iTunes 7 that you'd like to help our listeners learn about before they find out about them themselves?
No, I'm still having fun working through the rest of the details on cover art, so that's got my neurons maxed out right now.
Just give us a very quick review of the Ray Charles Count Basie CD that we were just listening to.
Oh, I read a piece in the New York Times and heard a segment on National Public Radio last week about a new CD called Ray Sings, Basie Swings, Ray Charles and the Count Basie Orchestra. And I said, oh, it sounds pretty good. But what was doubly interesting was that Ray Charles and the Basie Orchestra never recorded together. The producers found, and this is the short version of a long story, the producers found a great recording of Ray Charles' small band recording live in the early 70s. They loved the vocals. The music was not as good, perhaps, as it could have been. And somebody got the great idea to commission new charts, have them recorded in the studio with the Count Basie Orchestra, and it was reverse engineered, so to speak, to fit perfectly with the existing 35-year-old Ray Charles vocal, and the album cooks. It's great. Run out and get it as soon as you can.
But I don't see it here on the iTunes Store. Is it not in the iTunes Store yet? I did a search for Ray Charles. Well, we can look this up later on. But if they want to search, just go into iTunes, click on iTunes Store over on the left, do a search for Ray Charles or Count Basie, and if it's there, it's there. We haven't found it, but that says more about us than about the iTunes
Store. The CD has only been in general release for maybe 10 days, so it doesn't surprise me that it's not available yet on the iTunes Music Store.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to the MyMac.com mini podcast. We've enjoyed producing this first combo Captain and Captain segment of All Over the Mac. And thanks, David. Hope you can join us again.
We will.
Robert Hazelrick here with another speedy review. Today I have Data Video's DAC-200. It's a bi-directional composite DB converter. What does that mean? Well, let's say you've got some old video. What this device will do is take your analog signal from either a S-Video or RCA jacks, and it will convert it into a digital video signal, so you can import it into Final Cut Pro or iMovie. Because it's bi-directional means that you can take that digital video signal back out and run it to tape if you need to. So you could do all your editing in Final Cut Pro and then save it to VHS if you wanted to, or some other type of analog signal recording device, although I don't know why you would want to. Anyway, it was very simple to use. I simply plugged it into my VCR, and I also tried it with my camcorder. Plugged it into my FireWire port and fired up iMovie, which instantly recognized it, manually started to play the videotape, and then hit record on iMovie, and it brought everything in. The video quality was only as good as the video quality. In other words, some of my old VHS tapes of Family Video, you know, have been sitting around for quite some time, so they were a little blurry and scratchy and had some white noise. And the device worked nearly flawlessly throughout my extensive 40-hour test. I did note that on occasion I had some audio-video syncing issues. Some of the video that I've imported into iMovie ended up looking like an overdubbed Japanese movie. Everyone's lips were moving, and then a second later you would hear what they were saying. The other issue that I ran into with the device was occasionally when there were breaks in the video. In other words, when the old videotape was cutting from scene to scene, and there was actually a little bit of space of white snow in between each clip. Occasionally, the import would get hung up. Now, I'm not sure if this is the fault of the device or the fault of iMovie not being able to import the signal, but I did have to babysit the video while it was being imported. There was an easy fix to this dilemma when I was importing the video. Basically, all I had to do is stop the import and then click the import button again, and that would rectify the situation. It didn't happen all that often, but again, I did have to babysit the video while it was being imported. Overall, I was pleased with the performance of the unit. The DAC-200 retails for $200, and I would recommend it for anyone who has a lot of old VHS stuff that they need to get into iMovie so you can burn it onto DVD. As always, thanks for listening. This has been Robert Hazelrig with a speedy review.
Good evening. This is Not Mac News. I'm Guy Searle with all the news I can use that I obviously abused. Send your thoughts, comments, threats, lawsuits, and Marvel Comics action figures to notmacnews@gmail.com. Dateline, Cupertino, California. Apple's new line of portable computers known as the MacBook and the MacBook Pro have been in the press recently concerning excessive heat from the bottoms of their laptops. Sorry, notebook computers. Apple obviously isn't immune to first release itis in relation to their products. The excessive heat is reported to cause hotspots on people's skin resembling sunburn. Other symptoms could include the heartbreak of psoriasis, foot acne, and the possibility of becoming temporarily sterile. As that last bit of information has made its way around the net, thousands of Mac nerds have purchased the MacBooks, if only to hang out at Starbucks for expensive internet access and to show that having sex with them will not lead to an unplanned pregnancy. Unfortunately, most baristas interviewed by Not Mac News has said that short of owning a Porsche, none of them would ever go out with computer nerds. On a more positive note, the heat and radiation emitted by the MacBooks has led to some energy savings for those who sleep in the nude. It seems they no longer have to turn on their lights late at night to make their way around their homes. Not Mac News. Finding innovative ways for getting around political correctness. I'm Guy Searle, and I wish you a good night.
Hey everyone, Tim Robertson, the publisher and owner of MyMac.com here. You know, I am just amazed by the stupidity sometimes in the world. The Gartner Group releases a report that says Apple should quit the hardware business. You know, the funny thing is, Apple just sold more Macs in the last quarter than any other quarter in the history of the company. They are increasing their market share. This is a company that makes, six times less computers or six times less market share than Dell. And Dell made $503 million in profit in the last quarter. Anybody know what Apple made in the last quarter? Try $546 million. So Apple sold less machines than Dell, and yet somehow, they made more money. Kind of hard to figure that, isn't it? John Gruber up at daringfireball.net calls these guys the jackass of the week. And I would definitely have to agree. I simply don't know how anybody can keep their jobs when they clearly do not know the business for which they're giving these reports on. One of the things they say is that Apple should team up with Dell. With Dell. You know, the last time I checked, Dell doesn't make anything. Dell just assembles and sells. They don't... Dell doesn't actually create anything. Okay? The only company in the computer market that actually creates something seems to be Apple. Apple should quit the hardware business is the name of the report. My mind is boggled by this. In a surprisingly ambiguous report, ambitious report, called Apple Should License the Mac to Dell, Gartner Group says Apple should concentrate on what it does best, create software, and make use of Dell's production and distribution infrastructure. What Apple does best, create software, really? So what's the iPod? The iPod is just software? I agree that the software and iTunes and the OS and on the iPod itself makes all the difference. Anybody can make a little MP3 music player, but you know what? The last time I checked, people don't buy the iPod because of the software. They don't even think about it. Apple makes great hardware. When Apple started, they weren't a software company. They were a hardware company. Apple has always been, and will always be, a hardware company. Yes, they make software. They make software to run on their great hardware. That's just the way it is. Let's see. They also report Apple increased its share of the PC market to around 4.6% in July this year, according to figures. Gartner claims that with the right partners, distribution channels, and more affordable prices, computers running the macOS could eventually account for 20% of the total PC market. These guys are stupid. Apple just made $546 million. They've got $10 billion in the bank. Why would they possibly want to license their OS? Why? It's insulting. It's not insulting to Apple or to Mac fanboys like us, but it's insulting to the people that they're supposedly, and I use this term very lightly, supposedly serving with reports like this. Apple's margins for its Mac business, currently around 40%, are only sustainable because component makers such as Intel choose to prop up the business, Gartner claims. I would really like to see their proof of that. How is Intel propping up the Mac business? How? You know, Apple's been selling Intel machines not even for 12 months, and somehow Intel's propping up Apple over the last few years as Apple sales of the Macintosh has consistently grown and grown and grown. So how has Intel been propping them up all this time? It's it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So, you know, I say nobody read any reports coming out of the Gartner Group, because clearly they don't know what they're talking about. They're an embarrassment to their business. It's, well, anyways, this has been the My Mac Mini Podcast. This is sponsored by SmallDog.com and Innotech.com. Check out our website for all the links to the show notes, anything that any of the contributing editors here talked about. You'll find a link up on the website. We'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. We're always looking for feedback to read on the, how do I put it, the original podcast. And we can read some feedback here on this podcast as well. I know a few people have sent in comments. I was going to read them. Unfortunately, I deleted a bunch of my Gmail, and I really didn't mean to do that, but it happens sometimes. You can also simply pick up a telephone, any telephone, and call 801-938-5559. Leave MP3 audio feedback. In other words, you just talk into your phone after it beeps and all that. And we'll put it on the podcast. You know, we'll share your thoughts and ideas with all the other Mac users out there. Lastly, I want to mention that it looks like Twit may be going away this week in tech. I'd be real disappointed if that happens. There's a post up at dig.com that links back to Leo's site, in which Leo basically says they're taking this week and next week off. He's going to be on the Mac Cruise next week. And he really doesn't know what's going to happen. I don't understand that. He makes the mention that Twit is on life support. And, you know, the last time I checked, Twit's almost always one of the top podcasts released. So, boy, it's got me very curious. Maybe Twit just costs so much to produce because so many people are downloading that Leo's just not going to be able to continue to do it. Or maybe it's simply that they record on a Sunday and it's very hard to get guests on Sunday. I should know. But whatever the case may be, I really hope that This Week in Tech does not go away. I don't want it to, and if you listen to This Week in Tech, I'm sure you don't want to see it go as well. So let's keep our fingers crossed, and I don't know, maybe head up to leoville.am and see if we can keep Twit alive. Thanks for downloading the podcast. Hope to hear from you soon, and see you this Thursday.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.